Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I think what's interesting about the movie is that they're saying they're in love with hip hop as they're narrating and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But truly, you can't even separate hip hop and themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, their love story is born. This week, we are talking about the 2002 comedy Brown Sugar.
Welcome to the No More Late Fees podcast. I'm Jackie.
And I'm Danielle, and we're just two best friends and ex-Blockbuster employees rewatching some of the best and worst movies from the late 90s and early 2000s. This week, we are talking about the 2002 comedy Brown Sugar. But before we dive in, let's get into some housekeeping. If you love the podcast and you want to support us, here are a few ways that you can.
Did you know writing a review and or rating us helps us get more listeners? If you want to be featured and help us grow, head to Apple, Spotify, Podchasers, iHeartRadio, Good Pods, anywhere you find your podcast, and leave us a review.
And while you're there, just make sure you hit the subscribe button to make sure you get all the updates when our new episodes are live.
And do you want the behind-the-scenes scoop, the stuff that didn't make it into the episode? Danielle being scared at nothing in her house occasionally. Head on over to patreon.com/no more late fees, become a bestie, and have access to all of that and more.
Well, let's get into Brown Sugar. We've got childhood friends Andre and Sydney, bound by their love for hip hop, as they navigate success, love, and broken dreams in the music industry. The movie stars Taye Diggs, Sanaa Lathan, Yasin Bey, formerly known as Mos Def, Queen Latifah, Nicole Ari Parker, and Boris Kodjo. Directed by Rick Famuyiwa, and also written by Rick Famuyiwa and Michael Elliott. You can watch it currently on Stars. But before we start, let's get to our ratings rewind.
So you know the drill. Before we get into the movie, we'll reveal the rating our Y2K versions of ourselves would give. Then at the end, we'll see if our current selves agree with our initial rating. Our scale consists of would buy it again.
The best would play on repeat.
5-day rental.
Would watch again.
2-day rental.
And okay, but nothing to write home about.
And same day rental.
Straight up trash. Garbage.
The Dalmatians. Danielle, what is your Y2K rating?
Would buy it because I own it.
I have never seen this movie.
Okay, well, that's one of the goals of this podcast is to get you through these black movies that you haven't seen that are hood rat classics.
I thought I was doing pretty good in that genre, but apparently not.
Look, the funniest thing is probably that you've seen more hood rat classics than I have. So it should be interesting to see when we start going into some of those.
I do vividly remember you making me watch Don't Be a Menace to South Central while drinking your juice in the
hilarious. That was why.
So we got to start somewhere. I've also seen Woo, which I feel like is a deep dive. So
yeah, but apparently that was me making you go to see that. And I don't even know why. I saw her outfits and I was like, yes, I would like to see that movie. It's going to be great. And it's Jada Pinkett. So like, I didn't think I could go wrong.
We can forgive.
Because I love Low Down Dirty Shame so much. I was like, yeah.
I have 100%. Seen Set It Off. Does that count?
Look, we're not putting up, okay. We're not putting your status of how many black movies you've seen into question. Okay. I don't worry.
Okay, good.
Plus, at the end of the day, all of my black friends judge me because I'm your best friend and I didn't teach you.
Oh, okay. Good. So it's your fault. I like that.
Yes. That's great. Throw me under the bus. You should have said, no, it's not your fault, Danielle. It's not my responsibility to make me watch all the black movies that came out in the 90s and 2000s. But
It really is. I worked at Blockbuster and I had access to all of them, so I could have broadened my horizons.
Well, I'm hoping that you like this one because I feel like this is a fun one. Again, we're back into that time period where we just had really great Black Renaissance romance movies. The box office for this movie, we had an $8 million budget for Brown Sugar, and it made over $28 million worldwide, which is pretty damn good considering. And this movie was on the heels of after the director Rick directed The Wood, which we're going to do later this year, which is fun. And Lil Raj at the Chicago Sun-Times, he gave Brown Sugar 3 out of 4 stars and said it was more like a slice of Black professional life than a rap comedy. Interesting. I'm going to dig into that in a second.
Okay.
A film thoughtful about its characters, who he said were as deep and complex as those in Terry McMillan novels. Now, I thought it was interesting that he was saying that it was like a slice of Black professional life than a rap comedy. I'm not quite sure if he's just talking about rap comedies from the past, maybe. I don't know. But it's not unusual because hip hop is like the foundation of so many Black people's lives, especially mm-hmm. during that pivotal time period where a lot of people watched hip hop actually become this thing. You know, it's one of the younger music forms. And yeah, especially if you grew up in New York, in every borough, you are seeing some of, and we'll talk about that when we get into the first scene. But yeah, Lil Raj, I think you were trying to give a compliment, but it was also weird. So I'm going to just leave it at that.
I take umbrage with the fact that he called it a comedy. I don't find this to be a comedy.
It's more like a dramedy. I think, again, we have I laugh a lot in this movie. I would consider it a rom-com, less on the com, per se. I would say it's a rom-com in the sense that, like, a lot of the rom-coms in the Black genre are a little bit more, like, when it goes into the area, it's just way more comedy than romance, I guess you could say, or it's like a sex comedy per se. I think Two Can Play That Game was a traditional rom-com. This one is a little bit mixed, but it's also not like Love and Basketball where there's no comedy, but it still gets labeled under rom-com sometimes, I think. I don't know.
Yeah. I found this to be like in line with The Notebook.
No, Jackie, that's melodrama.
Oh, this was melodramatic. The only comedy I found were in like the Dalmatian duo and stuff like that. Like there was very little comedy between the main characters.
I thought that they laughed a lot and joked with each other. They had like most of the conversations between Sydney and, gosh, now I just want to call him Tay Diggs. Between Dre and Sydney were light, and you know they would have moments of like seriousness, obviously, but even when they were serious, Dre would probably throw a joke in there. Sydney's probably a little bit more serious than he is. I definitely found the levity in this. It's not the same level as like The Notebook. I didn't laugh once in The Notebook. I don't know. And like then you have like their best friends. But it's kind of like when Harry met Sally, essentially a newer, Blacker version. That's how they pitched it, how the director pitched it. Because in When Harry Met Sally, they call that a rom-com.
I've only seen When Harry Met Sally once, so.
And same with You've Got Mail. I mean, there's not a lot of heavy things, but there's not a lot of, I'm not laughing a lot during that one. I don't know. I just don't think it's The Notebook, though. Nobody's dying.
It felt very dramatic to me.
Interesting. Okay. To each its own. Let's talk about the cast. So this is now, by the time this movie comes out, this is the third pairing of Sanaa Lathan. And so first being the best man, second the Wood, and now this movie. And the Wood, well, I'm not even getting to it because we'll do that movie. But you could see in their chemistry how at ease they are with each other mm-hmm. by the time they get to this movie, probably because they've done three movies with each other. And I just think it's interesting because I had no idea that Lorenz Tate was approached to play Dre and he turned it down. I'm just like wondering what that would have looked like. I love me some Lorenz Tate. I don't know. I don't know what that would have been. No, it would have been a different kind. I feel like the vibes would have been totally different.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Can you hear Myrtle?
No.
Okay.
It took me until we have done a couple of movies with Nicole Ari Parker at this point, and mm-hmm. it took me till this movie to mm-hmm. realize that she plays Lisa Todd Wexley in the new Sex and the City series. And I didn't make that correlation until this movie for some reason.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, I know I've seen those eyes before.
Yeah, she's been, I'm trying to think, well, obviously 200 Cigarettes, but
yeah,
I can't think of another movie we've done that she's been in so far. The funny thing is that she ends up being in the new, so we had the best man holiday a few years after, and then last year or the year before, I think it was 2022, the Best Man Final Chapters, which was a TV show that ended up being on Peacock, came out.
Mm-hmm.
And she was in that TV show. And they kind of make like a joke that Taye Diggs' character in The Best Man, they're like, oh, did you sleep with her too? And I was like, that's really funny because obviously they're making a joke because he slept with Mia in The Best Man, but also because of this movie, potentially, because she played his wife. So I thought that was funny. And then her husband's in this one too, Boris
mm-hmm.
Kodjo, who is a beautiful man.
Oh gosh. Like he walked on screen, I was like, I didn't like how can get someone get prettier than Taye Diggs, and somehow it happened.
It's possible.
Yes.
I, you know what? I don't, now that I've seen this, rewatch this movie, I realized I prefer a bald Taye Diggs than this. I think this one was like okay, but I think it's even worse when we see him, when we had him in When Sela Got Her Groove Back. It's like the hairline keeps
We've done a
moving.
lot of Taye Diggs movies.
Yeah, he was the it guy during his time.
And we have quite a few scheduled for this year.
You're
no,
the best
we have
man.
The Wood,
mm-hmm.
and then we have Rent.
I can't wait for Malibu's Most Wanted because he's in
Oh, I
that
can,
one.
because I don't want to have to watch that movie.
I don't either, but I also, because Regina Hall's in it, and I love her.
I know.
I love her so much. Oh, man. So we almost got Lorenz Tate, and then Sanaa Lathan almost turned it down because during that summer, she was set to perform at New York Shakespeare in the Park, and it was a dream of hers to do that. So she wasn't sure that she would want to do Brown Sugar. And she didn't think the script was strong enough. So I think after maybe a few tweaks, they finally convinced her. So that's good. I'm glad I think they fit well. They have really good chemistry.
Yeah, I think so too. I think she was perfect for this character.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think she had really good chemistry with Queen Latifah too.
Mm-hmm.
I love that Queen Latifah, I mean, she didn't have to play, you know, a side character essentially, but she seemed like she was having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was kind of like a really cool wink at the fact that we have so many pioneers of hip hop in this movie and she's in it, but she's not playing herself. So it's pretty interesting. But I also feel like when we're talking about the pioneers of hip hop, we really didn't see any real female MCs in this movie in the beginning as like, you know, Queen Latifah's in it, like I said, but not really. And then, I mean, Angie Martinez, she raps, but like, she's not. If I was thinking of like the pioneers of hip hop, I wouldn't think of her. So I feel like that was a miss. It would have been cool to see like Salt and Pepper or your friend
McLight.
MC Light in
will
it.
Never die. I just have to sit with the mistakes that I've made in the past.
So let's, oh, and just a side note, Queen Latifah being as funny as she was in this movie impressed Elliot, the one of the writers, Malcolm Elliot, I believe. And that's what got him to write her part for Just Right, which came out in 2010 and starred her and Common, who also makes a cameo in this movie. So I love that for her.
Yeah. And I do want to know, because you do see it in the movie, Brown Sugar was one of the first films to shoot on location in New York City after 9/11. This movie came out in 2002. And Lathan solemnly recalls filming in the months following 9/11. I remember we were probably one of two productions in the city. You could still smell the ash, she had told Essence magazine. So there is like an establishing shot with the two beams of light where the Twin Towers used to be. So just, it must have been really hard shooting and knowing that it was kind of
looming
post 9/11 in a new kind of New York City skyscape.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, one of the biggest characters of the movie is this, the setting of New York City. And yes, at the time, like, I remember the mayor of New York trying to, they had all sorts of, so many people were filming in Canada. And so they had a lot of tax credits and different incentives to try to get productions to film in New York. And I mean, so many people left at that time. But one of the best parts of this movie, and especially like just personally for me, living in New York, I think a lot of people who've never been to New York or never lived in New York, when you see it on the in the movies, you mostly get a perspective of Manhattan. Manhattan equals New York, especially in rom-coms. But in this movie, you get a backdrop of parts of New York that most people don't know, you know, predominantly in parts of Brooklyn. I mean, they do shoot in Manhattan and some of those iconic places, like they, I believe they're in Central Park at one point, but you're seeing like rooftop parties in Brooklyn. You're seeing brownstones and all that good stuff. So it's, you could tell that they're not just in Manhattan and they shot in different places. And I really, really enjoyed that.
So we open up and it's an interview with pioneers of hip hop. And they're all being asked, when did you fall in love with hip hop? So we see Kool G. Is that, yeah. I can't read my own handwriting.
Kool G Rap.
Okay. Kool G, Pete Rock, De La Soul, Deep Thought, Jermaine Dupri, Common, Talib Kendi.
Talib, he's from, what do you call it?
Let me Google it. I don't want to get it wrong.
Oh, Talib Kweli.
Well, I can't read my own handwriting. Talib Kweli, Russell Simmons, Questlove, Big Daddy Kane, and Method Man.
Yeah, I also think, who else is the lead singer of The Roots? I thought I saw him in it, but maybe not. Doesn't matter. Yeah, Russell Simmons, seeing him on screen, I was like, oh, so cringy. Because
sucked you right back in.
Yeah.
To such, baby fat.
Yeah. It's such a Method Man. Yeah.
We'll get to his movies.
So a lot of people in the beginning, and they're playing out, you know, in the park. Because you see Dre and you see, and I wanted to say Sinai. So you see Dre, you see Sydney in the park watching these guys have rap battles. And this is literally what was happening. People would be in the park, people are playing basketball, people are literally battling each other. And it's just funny how the culmination of so many things were happening around this time, because this is a flashback to when they're younger in the early 80s. And you know, this is the time where people are not only rapping and hip hop is born, but you're seeing people break dance and all that. So it's just like a whole new world exploding before their eyes. And I think what's interesting about the movie is that they're saying they're in love with hip hop as they're narrating and stuff like that. But truly, you can't even separate hip hop and themselves. You know, their love story is born in hip hop. But as they're growing to learn hip hop and learning it and understanding and falling in love, it's the same for each other as their friendship builds. And so much so that I don't even think, especially for Sydney, she's realized it's even happening. Because I think in one scene, she says that Dre asked her, like, should we date or something? I think when they were in college. And she's like, no. So it's already front of mind for him, I think.
Yeah.
It's taken Sydney a long time.
So we find out Sydney is editor of XXL magazine, and she is working on a book. And Dre is a music producer.
Yeah.
At a record studio or a record company, production company. What can I think of words?
Record label.
Yeah. Thank you. And he's just, you can tell from like this initial scene that he's just disheartened in the direction that this company is going with the music talent that they're bringing in. And he really wants to be true to hip hop and not do things that are gimmicky, which he feels like that's the direction this is headed.
Yeah, I think when you look at the beginning of rap music and hip hop, it was a way for people to tell, it was storytelling. People are telling their experiences where they're living. I mean, the fact that like a large population of the country knows where Marcy Projects is in, or knows what that is because of Jay-Z talking about it. You know, you have these guys and women talking about their lived experience, but also using it as a way to protest, give a voice. It's poetry, emotion, all of these things. And then by the time we get to this time period where this movie comes out, it becomes very, you know, capitalistic. You have all these record companies come in and take something that was very pure and really sully it, essentially. And I think that's what Dre's character really represents, that struggle, because now you see hip hop is changing. It's giving so many people in the Black culture access to certain things that maybe they didn't have before, but it's like, at what cost, right? Like, what do I have to do to be able to get it? So I think that's also what Cav is kind of representing. And so you look at the record label and Cav, and you could see Dre kind of being pulled in both directions. And I think all of us can feel that. Like, I want money and I want to be stable, but I don't want to be in this machine, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So we're at a party. We see Dre like schmoozing, talking to everyone, just working his way through the crowd. This is when Sydney is introduced to Reese. And we also find out that Reese and Dre are engaged in this scene.
Right. He proposes, because when Sydney was on the West Coast, I think she was working. When we start the movie, she's in LA and she is now just taking this big job at XXL, becoming the editor in chief there. And so her and Dre have been apart for, we don't know how long. I'm assuming a few years because they were in college together, but now they've been apart. And I think she's heard about Reese, but has no, she's kind of blindsided because she has no idea that Dre is this dedicated and in love with her, essentially, that he is going to propose. And I love the scenes between Sydney and Reese, because everyone has probably experienced this at one point in your life where you, especially if your dude has a girlfriend, a friend that's a girl, or if you are the friend that's the girl, and there's just like this fakeness that happens, unless someone's being a real dick and it's like mean to you when they first meet you. But it's always pretty awkward because you know that bitch hates you.
Yeah.
You know it.
I 100% know that situation.
Yeah, they hate you. And you may hate them back. So, especially if you're Sydney, who doesn't realize that she's in love with Dre. So it's a very awkward fakeness that happens when they interact. And then you can see Sid like lose it in her face watching Dre propose to her. And I love that Sydney's best friend, aka cousin, played by Queen Latifah, is there, kind of narrating the emotions, Francine, of what's happening. Like, damn, girl, you okay?
I love Queen Latifah in general, but I loved her character in this movie. Just very no nonsense, like very like says what whatever is on the mind is coming out the mouth type thing. But she does it in a way where it's very caring and loving. It's not
like in two can play that game where her friends were combative, like, girl, you gonna let this happen? It's more of like, Sydney, what's going on?
You good girl?
So yeah, they're now engaged and we're on a whirlwind of they're both in their jobs doing their own thing. Sydney's working on her book. She's now the editor, and Dre is being pulled in a direction with his boss trying to get him. He like jokingly makes the suggestion about the song "The Boy Is Mine," but maybe having rappers. And then his boss, of course, takes it, played by Wendell Pierce, beautifully. I love him, it. Whatever he's in. He's like, yes, we could totally do this, and takes it in a direction that Dre was joking and being sarcastic about. So that's a seed planted, I think, around this time. And we see the interactions like after this, I think after they have the proposal. Is this when they go to the park? I think are they looking up gifts?
Yes. And he's making a comment. No, sorry. I'm thinking of the scene where Francine and Sydney are in Sydney's new apartment and she still hasn't unpacked.
Yeah.
And Francine pulls out the vibrator and she's like, it's a back massager.
But it's funny because it looked like the neck massager from Brown. Is it called that store? That
Brookstone.
Brookstone that Samantha bought and was going crazy without it on Sex and the City.
Let me see what else. Sydney remarks that no man is on the same page with her and they take up too much of your time. So she's trying to convince herself that she doesn't need a man. And even deeper rooted, she doesn't need Dre.
I think she's saying she doesn't need a man, but she's really saying she's denying that she wants Dre.
Yeah. And then we get the bridal tea, the bridal shower tea.
Do they go shopping first for? No. What happens is when she's with Francine, she's like, oh, damn, I've got to get this bridal shower present. Mm-hmm. And so I've always been confused by this. So there's a bridal shower mm-hmm. and then there's like a bachelorette party.
Correct.
And so at the bridal shower, I think it's more for the family. Your grandma, your mom could be there. It's very low key. While a bachelorette party is like you and your friends, your mom and your grandma most likely aren't going to be there. Sometimes they are. And hey, I've been to one where the mom was there and it was a fun time. Hats off to Miss Acosta. Well, Bazua. Sorry, I was going to call her Acosta after David. We had a great time in Mexico. Just saying. But so she asked Francine to get a gift for her. She's like, no worries, I got this. And Francine, being Francine, gets a pearl thong. But who doesn't look at the gift before bringing it? Like,
or asking, like, what'd you get?
What'd you get? Yeah. Sydney does blindly brings this gift. I think it might have been, it wasn't even wrapped. There was a bow on it. So, like, she could have easily taken a peek. And again, this is where the grandma, everybody's there. It's like embarrassing. But Reese plays it off and laughs or whatever. Again, very fake, very surface. But then the next scene, this is where I'm like, okay, I have a problem with Sydney. Like, this is, what are you doing, girl? Like, everyone has common sense that, yes, the questions are about Dre, because they're asking questions. Everybody's in the room, supposedly. And I also wonder if there were any people that Dre knew, like his mom or sister or whoever. But like, Sydney is answering every single one of the questions. Girl, pretend that you don't know. It was being real stupid, I think.
And that just forces a wedge between you and Reese, like even more so than like the uncomfortable, like you're marrying my best friend type situation right. That was going on anyway. And you know, like, even though Reese is a lawyer and she's gorgeous and all of these things, you know, deep down, she's like jealous of Sydney because she's known Dre longer and he holds her up on a pedestal.
So then I think the next thing that we see is Dre and Sydney, there's now shopping or registering or something. I don't know. She's with Dre because I think she's telling him, or are they at the park eating hot dogs?
I can't remember what happened. I wrote street meat, so they must have been eating hot dogs.
They're at the hot dog stand and they're eating street meat. Good old hot dogs. I don't know. I just saw like something on the news that said, like, I know that the things in hot dogs are awful. Like, I just know it. I don't even want to know. I think they had found human DNA or something in either it was hot dogs or like spam, Vienna sausage, whatever. And I was like, okay, I'm just not going to eat it anymore. But there's something about New York hot dogs that I'm like, you know what? Call me Hannibal Lecter because I'm not going to eat it every time.
I feel like I've never, like, I don't even know if I've, like, had a New York vendor hot dog. I don't think we had one when we went to New York. And we didn't go to Gray's Papaya.
That's the hot spot. But my mom always talks about a Nathan's hot dog because we grew up in Brooklyn near Coney Island. Ooh, wow. Ooh. And my mom worked at the Nathan's stand in Coney Island. So she really loves Nathan's hot dog. But
yep. We Gray's didn't even Papaya, have Nathan's when we went to Coney Island.
Oh, well, I barely remember Coney Island when we went. Insert picture of us at Coney Island.
To prove we were there.
Honestly, it wasn't until the pictures that you had showed me the other day that I remembered that we went to Coney Island when we went to New York. So, yeah, I guess we owe another trip back to New York.
I guess so. 2025 will be 20 years.
Jesus. We could do it. We could do it. You make out that list of all the things you want to do ahead okay. of time, and then I'll mentally prepare. I'll look at it and say, I will be able to go to this, this, and this with you.
The best I got is this.
This is what we'll do. Or we'll make a compromise where maybe there's something I know I don't want to do, but I'm going to put something on my list that I know you won't want to do, and we're just going to have to do it.
That's fine.
Hey there, welcome to the Latchkey Sibs, the podcast that challenges three siblings to take a look at our childhood movie cabinet and one film at a time, criticize or defend the viewing choices we made as kids. I'm your host, Gray Baker, and I'm the youngest.
I'm Holland, and I'm the oldest.
I'm Allegra, and I'm a Scorpio.
So what we do, each week one of us will present a movie to be critiqued, and the other two will be scoring it based on five specific categories. Can we follow this? I put it at a six. It's a pretty six? Ridiculous plot. It's a pretty ridiculous plot.
Appropriate for children. I had it at a seven. I'm keeping it at a seven.
Oh, come on.
I have it as a nine.
Each week's score will be added up, and at the end of each season, the sibling with the most points will be labeled master of the remote control, and the loser will be forced to do some sort of punishment.
I think we can let the magic be whatever the magic needs to be, because it's a movie,
classic,
and it's a children's movie.
Hand-wavy children's movie answer.
I'm just saying.
I'm like, listen, you old fuck. You just me too'd your friend.
Okay, the horse scene. Jesus Christ.
Yes.
That is erotica. I also wrote,
yes,
this movie is horny. This whole movie
is so horny.
It's so horny. Okay.
We are the Latchkeys, saved here for you. Reviewing movies from back in our youth.
Tune in every Wednesday to find out who becomes the master of the remote control on Latchkey Sibs.
Now we're at open mic night at Webster Hall.
Let me tell you about Webster Hall.
Oh, tell me.
Shutuma and I used to really go out and party when I lived in New York. And Webster Hall, good times. Really good shows you could see there. And also, my cousin would invite me to this. They used to have like male night reviews, like a Magic Mike situation.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first time I discovered what a cock ring was, Jackie.
Last episode, it was Ping Pong Poon. And this time, cock rings. Danielle, you're just so worldly.
I was shocked because I was like, what's that on his thing? And my cousin's like, oh, it's cock ring. It helps them stay longer.
Well, I didn't even get it.
But I also learned that I am not a fan of male strippers. It was quite creepy to me. So
yeah, like I like watching Magic Mike. I think just because how well they dance.
Mm.
But like, I don't want you to touch me. I don't want you to flip me upside down and like rub my crotch on your face. Like I don't want that.
And also doing that tongue thing they do too.
Or there was an episode of Real Housewives where they went to Vegas and they went to the Magic Mike show and they sprayed whipped cream all over Kyle and they were like licking it off and stuff. I'm like, no, I don't. No, that's gross and sticky. You do this to women like six nights a week. So I don't know who else you've been licking. They could have not showered all week. Like, I don't know. And I don't care for this.
Yeah. Especially as many people are coming out and airing out that they don't shower. So.
No.
Yeah. So Webster Hall, good times. But yeah, they're having open mic night. And obviously Dre has invited Sydney because this is where he goes to scout new talent. And this is their like bonding thing because it's hip hop night, you know, for them to experience. And this is where when they, I believe Dre has already seen Cav before perform and he's already approached him. But this is just a reminder that like he really thinks that he would be a great addition. But that conversation, because Yasin is performing on stage and I always really liked this song. I think I even downloaded it on like LimeWire or something afterwards.
Allegedly.
The crime is too long. You can't catch me. That computer long gone. But then it's interrupted because Dre's trying to talk to Kev about like, you know, you can be on our label. And he's like, nah, your label is not where it needs, where I want to be. And that's when Ren and Ten, the rapping Dalmatians or something stupid show up. And it just throws Dre's street cred right out the water because he's like, what the hell? So, yeah. I just find that scene hilarious. Those two are idiots.
I was like, GQ, is that you? No, some other rapping white boy.
He does look like him a bit, but no disrespect to our boy, though. No, he would have played it well.
He would have. That's why I was like, this seems like a character that'd be very up GQ's alley. This is when Dre decides I'm out, okay, and he wants to go and start his own label. And is it this scene or another scene where they start singing the like bastardized the bitch, version of the
bitch is mine? And it's not the scene, it's afterwards, because okay. I think Dre quits when they're in the studio and he's having to produce. So his boss tells him, like, hey, you, this is your new act. You've got to make this work. And I think Dre is committed to that. Because this is before him and Reese get married. So he hasn't made any drastic changes yet to his life. But so we, did we get a scene of Sydney and Dre shopping yet? Because I think that might have happened before.
Yeah, when they were this.
Yes. But just want to bring this up because when they're shopping together, the shopkeeper, wherever they're at, as they're looking at this vase, thinks that they're a couple. So that's point one. Point two is this vase that they're looking at, Sydney ends up buying, and you can see the vase throughout the movie in different places, which is pretty interesting. And it's almost like part of their evolution at that point. So I just wanted to mention that because it's a fun game. If you've seen Brown Sugar a few times, to pay attention to the blue, I think it's a blue vase, and see where it's like placed. Also, when we get to see where Reese and Dre live in comparison to where Sydney lives, you could see the influence of Reese, and her aesthetic is very like clean, modern, like white everything, you know, very sleek, chic, rich girl vibes, while Sydney is more homegrown. She's in a brownstone. A lot of, I'm trying to think, earth tones, a lot of reds, rich browns, that kind of stuff. And it's like totally drastic differences between the two of them. So I honestly don't see much in common with between the both women, except they're extremely beautiful. So it's interesting to me that I feel like Dre looks at Reese as status. And he's almost trying to live up to her status. You know, even later when he talks about their ring, the ring that he bought her and how much it cost and how he's still paying it off, which, I mean, that's not uncommon for most people, but you could tell, like, he's trying to fit into something that doesn't
work for him. Well, and she even says something about, like, well, I help pay for the ring, or I pay
for it. Or I'm paying for it, yeah.
Yeah. So, like,
she's a lawyer.
She also has like a little like aloofness about her because she's a lawyer. She makes a ton of money. Like she can help support her man, you know?
Well, yeah, I think she was like making it definitely a dig at him, because at that point we see later when she brings that up, it's because Dre is starting his own thing. Mm-hmm. But you can even hear Sydney talk about it a little bit, about how Dre is kind of performing for Reese when she's at that party and she's answering all those questions. Cause one of the questions that comes up is, what is Dre's favorite drink? And so Sydney actually doesn't just say one drink. She says one drink, which is actually his favorite, and then says a Macallan when he's trying to impress somebody. And that is the drink that Reese says. So we now know, and it comes up later, that Reese orders a Macallan for him, because that is what Dre was trying to do when he met Reese. He was trying to impress her. So I find all of those things very interesting so far.
So I think after meeting Ren and Ten, that's when Dre like starts thinking about leaving the company and starting his own label. And he goes to Sydney and is kind of just talking out loud and like, it's just not where I want to be, and moving in a direction that I'm not happy with. And this is when they kiss, and Sydney stops him, and he does say he wants to marry Reese, so it's kind of like putting that.
I feel like in this scene, there's so much unsaid things that happen, because as soon as he starts having these feelings, which I think makes, yes, he's in love with Reese. He loves Reese, but he hasn't transitioned some of those communications that you should be having with your partner, mm-hmm. versus Sydney, who he feels so literally at home with, to say his inner thoughts and where he's going. And I think the problem is that he's having these conversations with Sydney first, and he's not even having the conversations with Reese. It's almost an afterthought, like he forgets because he's already broken it down with Sydney. And I think if this was just him and a guy, like a guy best friend, it might not be as big of a problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still a problem that you're not communicating with your spouse, but so many of us talk to our best friends and like think stuff through first before we maybe say to somebody else or even our partner. But I think once you're in a marriage, though, it's a little bit more difficult. And so when they kiss, Sydney pushes him back because she just knows that this isn't right. Like, it's wrong. Not that the kiss itself is wrong, like she doesn't want to kiss Dre, but I think she's, you know, you're about to get married literally tomorrow. And when she pushes him away, I feel like it's a rejection. Like, she wants to talk to him about it. Like, what are you going to, like, what are we doing? What are you going to do? And then he's like, oh no, I'm going to marry Reese. And I think he responds in that way because he feels like when she pushes him away, it's a rejection.
Yeah.
Also, when we learn later that he wanted to try to start something in college, it makes that scene make even more sense, because if he's already been slightly rejected in the past,
yep,
he's too afraid to really put his feelings out there because he believes Sydney does not have an interest in him in that way, in the way that he wants. And Sydney is giving mixed signals herself. She because is. Girl, why are you kissing him? You already saw the mood. Like, we all know. It's not like Dre just leaped on her. Mm-hmm. They were both vibing. So she was giving out a vibe as well. And he's wrong. I'm not saying he's not wrong, but still. It's a mess, girl. It's a mess.
Well, she's constantly denying the feelings that she has for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets into these really intimate discussion situations, and then like the lines are blurred, but then she has to bring herself back into the mental state of like, oh no,
like, right.
Shove it back down.
I honestly feel like she's scared because this is the most important relationship in her life. And when you're going to date, if things go wrong, that means she's losing her person. Mm-hmm. And I think that scares her more than anything. I don't think she wants to risk it. Yeah. So what happens? Dre goes and gets married, and they're at this wedding. And Francine's like, so she tells Francine what happened, that they kissed the night before. And Francine's like, girl, what are we doing here? Why aren't you stopping this wedding? I would have been, if I was Reese, I'd have been fucking pissed.
Yeah.
About these two talking during my wedding.
Yes. 100%.
Also, that she kissed my man, but yeah.
This is not the time or place to be having this discussion.
It was so rude. It's so rude that the pastor even had to say, do we have a problem? Like, what's going on over there? And people were shushing them. Yeah. And Francine was not trying to whisper.
No.
It was real awkward up in that bitch. So these two get married, Reese and Dre get married, and I'm assuming they go on their honeymoon, but then we kind of see just like a montage of them, Sydney and Dre, just like living their separate lives at this mm-hmm. point. And so we have to assume that they haven't really seen each other, because Sydney is doing her book and she's an editor. And I believe this is around the time that she gets the basketball player of her dreams, played by Kelby, played by Boris Kodjo, comes into the picture, and he's pretty much saying that he won't be interviewed for the magazine unless he requests that Sydney has to interview him.
Red flag.
I mean, I would be like, why? And so I love that Francine, I believe Francine tells her, girl, you need to start dating. You need to like start getting yourself out there. You need to change your wardrobe. You need to do all these things.
Yeah.
So I think she meets Kelby before, and they have like a good like back and forth or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know if they like that. I don't know if she talks to Dre before that or if it's Francine, but like they're questioning pretty much, why are you meeting this man kind of thing. But she meets him. He's very interested, and he asks her on a date. He's like, I think did they meet for dinner or something? So she did dress up for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, because Francine like even takes her to the hairdresser and gets her hair done and stuff like that. So she does show up for the date very nicely dressed. I mean, it may have just been like the place they were meeting was nicer, so she had to.
Yeah,
she dressed.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, but she dressed like I think old Sydney would have dressed up, I guess, but still not hot, you know, or like I'm trying to attract a man vibes. Yeah. So thank God for Francie. And Kelby liked what he saw, because then that's when he asked, you know, for them to go on a date. And when she tells Dre that she's going on this date, this man is flustered by that. He does not like this.
It was very much like, I'm sorry.
What?
Like, if he could have, like, whipped his head around, he would have. Like,
a hair flip for sure.
Yeah, he was not happy about the situation. I mean, you're talking about Boris Kodjo. Like, of course, you're going to be intimidated.
That man is beautiful. I mean, we could say that over and over and again. And when they go on their first date, though, like, this is why movies are horrible. These expectations. This man rents out an entire restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, supposedly cooks, because Dre questions that later. But and I think before this even happens, this is when Dre like has his last straw and he does quit his job and tells Sydney about it. And Sydney actually gives him his first check as an investor in his company.
Yes.
Well, by the time he goes to have that conversation with Reese and tells her, they're already starting to squabble a little bit. You could tell there's some tension. Reese was real calm. She was real calm about all this. But the moment she found that Sydney was the first investor and that he talked to Sydney first, she's like, right. Oh man, it was a mess. And then she's like, then she switched again into like, okay, fine, you've made this decision without talking to me, your partner. Okay, I will look for investors tomorrow, blah, 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 blah. And that's when he's like, oh, no worries, I got an investor. So what, is Sydney flipping the whole bill? Like, you can't get more investors? What are you talking about? He should have kept that to himself. I'm just saying. He should have kept that to himself.
Like, just shh.
Right. Just say,
nobody
I'm
getting needs to know.
No. And then, so he knows he's in the doghouse. And what gets me is he tries to call Sydney, knowing that she went on this date, right? And then she's probably still in it. He's trying to figure out, like, if she's going to knock boots with Kelby or not or whatever. So he calls her. And he's, like, sneaking in his, at some part of his house, calling her. And she has invited Kelby back to her house. And she's like, yeah. It's almost like Dre challenges her. So she really, like, okay, fuck it. Yeah, I'm going to go sleep with him.
Well, and the fact that, like, you already know your wife is pissed. Right. That you talked to Sydney about this before you talked to her about it. And now you're going to have the audacity to like sneak into another room and call Sydney and like ask her about her date, thinking I'm not going to hear you and come out and be like, I'm sorry. Didn't we not just have this conversation about how I feel about Sydney? Which I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but like, come on, man. Wait till you're at the office tomorrow. Like, you don't have to like grill her about her date immediately.
I think one thing, like a trope that I really hate about rom-coms is that when the two leads are with people they're not supposed to be with, mm-hmm. they always make those people out to be some sort of villain. And quite frankly, they're not. Like, I don't think Reese is a villain. I don't think Kelby is a villain. They might not mm-hmm. have been the right people for them, but the way that these two did them, especially in this movie, dirty.
Yeah.
Because Reese, I'm not mad at her. Well, I'm mad that she was having troubles with her husband. She had no idea that he had kissed Sydney. Mm-hmm. But besides that, he's having an emotional affair, essentially. But for her to go out and step out on him instead of like trying to figure out, because they have a communication issue, hands down.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think they did that to make it an easy out for his character to be able to leave and go to Sydney.
Yeah, because then he would have been the bad guy otherwise.
Yeah, but he still is.
Oh yeah, we're not negating his actions.
No, he still is. And then I think so in this process, their marriage, brand new marriage, is on the rocks, and Sydney is flourishing with Kelby. You know, she's having a great time. He's buying roses to fill up her whole damn house. She's going to his practices. They're like having a true on relationship. I forget how many months they're together at this point. I want to say like six months. Because I think they're having I might have skipped a bunch of stuff, but it's fine. They are having a party for, I want to say New Year's.
Yes.
So we can add this to a New Year's movie. Similar to, again, When Harry Met Sally, because they have a New Year's scene too. And this is when Kelby decides to propose.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because before he does that, he's having a conversation with Kev and talking about he wants to be a rapper, which I thought was really funny because that speaks to how many athletes, especially like basketball players, NFL players, who have dabbled in the career of trying to be a rap star. I'm not saying nobody is good. I'm just saying I haven't seen one yet. I mean, no hate on Shaq's album.
I'm going to say something about Shaq, and I love Shaq. Okay. I think he is precious. He's BFFs with my boy, Charles Barkley. I think Shaq is very, like, from what I've seen, no red flags. Like, he seems very kind. He's always willing to stop and take pictures with fans and, like, all of that. He mumbled. Like, I don't know how he had a rap album when he always sounds like he's got marbles in his mouth.
No. I don't know what to say. I've heard that, his raps from that album. Yeah. I don't. I'm no rap no aficionado myself. I just. He out here. So y'all go listen. Okay. Y'all go listen to Shaq's album. You tell us what you think. And if you're a hardcore fan, let us know. Are we in the wrong? Marble mouth Shaq. I don't know if I ever, like, I don't think I've paid attention to him mumbling, but I know he's just like a really deep voice. That's all I've ever like taken from his voice. But the rap game, did Kobe try to rap too? I don't know who else tried to rap.
Hey, Danielle.
Yep.
You know how I'm always getting on to you about fidgeting while we're on the podcast?
Yeah.
Well, I found something that is going to change our lives. It is a product called Conquer Ring, and it is a ring that fits on your finger like this. Uh-huh. And you can snap it and play with it. while you are sitting and talking and it's not distracting, it does have a nice little click.
Do they have different designs too?
It is highly customizable. You buy the ring itself. You can pop this piece out and then you can purchase other designs. Some are spinners where a secret message will show up as you spin it. They come in circular designs, diamonds, hexagons, even this cute little wave design.
Ooh.
If you have a person in your life that fidgets, has ADHD, and you just need something that they can keep on them, fidget while they're working or doing schoolwork or podcasting, head to myconquering.com and put in the coupon code Jackie10 and you'll get 10% off your first order. I just love it. I've had it for a couple of weeks now and can't recommend it more.
Nice.
Check it out.
But anywho, I love that Kelby, there was that like joke to the audience that he wants to work on an album. And he was like, oh, Cav, you can help me. And Cav is just trying to get away because he is trying to, he's trying to get Francine to notice him. And he's trying to get Dre to be like, you know, he's trying to say like, oh, I like her, but you know, I'm playing it cool kind of vibes.
Yeah.
And Dre's having a meltdown altogether. Anyways, he's like, dude, if you like her, just talk to her. Francine's cool, whatever. Francine is talking to Sydney and she's like laughing because the conversations that Cav has tried to have with her, like she knows that he likes her and she's like, I may give him some attention, maybe. So I think that whole backstory is hilarious and cute.
So cute. Let me see.
I think it would have been more fun if Reese and Kelby just would have cheated with each other.
Yeah. Well, and then it would have been like life imitating.
Art imitating life.
Yeah, that's it.
I love that these two met on the TV show of Soul Food. So it was like they took another 90s movie and then they met there. And then they've been in so many things together. I think it's cute that they can still work with each other. But there is a scene during this part where Kelby and Reese says like, do you, or Kelby says like, do you get used to this? Because they're watching Sydney and Dre have like this intimate moment and they're like arguing and she's like, no, you don't get used to this shit. So it's interesting that they're
bad for them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a mess. I feel like it's a red flag, honestly, because if you feel in your gut, if you have you're with somebody, because you could tell when a guy has a friend that's a girl and he is like not interested in her in any way. And I want to say people can have platonic friendships, but these two in particular, it's walking heat, literally, like flames.
Yeah.
Look at the scene behind me. They're about to jump over this counter, okay?
Yeah.
There's no way. But it gets worse after this because he's working. Dre has his own company and he's doing his own thing. And I don't think he's seeing Reese much. You see some like, I think it's like another montage. So these two are not really connecting like we saw previously. It's even worse. And then you're seeing Sydney have issues with Kelby. Or she's kind of wavering a little bit because, you know, she's a writer. And she wants feedback. She's working on this book. And she's realizing Kelby has never read anything that she's written. And this is when you know as the audience, like, this is it. This is a huge deal to Sydney. It might seem Kelby thinks it's small, but this is extremely big for her. Especially literally later on that day, she is talking to Dre. She doesn't ask him or anything. He literally quotes something that she wrote in like college or a newspaper she wrote years ago. Like, what the fuck?
It was like her first published piece or something like that.
Kelby ain't never had a chance.
Nope. None.
And I don't know if it's because he's an NBA player and he's fine as hell, he's rich. He thinks, I shouldn't have to do this much work.
Yeah.
But like, if you're going to marry this person and she's a writer, wouldn't you want to, like, if you expect her to come to your practices as she does in this movie and your games, how can you not read her stuff?
Yeah. Like, she's literally sitting there, like, writing at your practices to be with you, and you can't bother to, like... He does say that he read the piece she wrote on him.
Of course, you narcissistic bastard. Of course you're going to read the piece I wrote about you. But, yeah, but he does say, you know what, after playoffs or whatever, I'm going to read every single thing you've ever written, ever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, by that time, he don't even know. That was the moment he lost his girl.
Too little, too late.
Mm.
For shame, Kelby. So, let me see. This is, so I guess she caught, after, like, this whole exchange with Kelby happens, and she realizes, like, homeboy doesn't even read my shit. Like, he doesn't really care. Like, I'm good arm candy, and that's about it. Like, I'm a prop for him.
Right.
She calls Dre and he comes over, and this is when they have that discussion, and he quotes the piece that, like, her first published piece. And as they're talking, there's a throwaway line earlier in the movie where, like, Dre accidentally takes Reese's phone sometimes. I guess they have the same phone. So he grabbed Reese's phone by accident. So he sees this message from Richard, and he's like, and Sydney had expressed concern because she and Reese go to the same gym. And she's like, you know, like, people are always like hitting on Reese and stuff, and she's really flirty. And he's like, oh yeah, she's just really flirty. Like, I'm not concerned. And Sydney's like, okay, like, I just wanted to let you know my observations on it. Right. So once he gets this text message from Richard that says, like,
see you tonight or something.
Yeah. I'm assuming it says the restaurant because they know where to show up.
You're right.
So he's like, bet, let's go. And so they show up, and Sydney is so fucking embarrassed. And Dre is just like, oh, cool. Can we join you? Like, that's my wife. And the guy obviously has no clue. He's like, and then I think Dre says, like, this is my favorite restaurant or something like that, like, to add insult to injury. And this is when we get the comment about not wearing the $15,000 engagement ring I got you.
Got your titties all out.
And my, then the,
I think it was like one of his favorite dresses or something. Like, it just, yeah. It's like, I always liked that one on you. Got everything showing. Oh, and man. Then
the best line is, order a bottle of your most expensive champagne. We're celebrating my divorce. And I was like, oh, god damn.
And he sings it too. And they say that, like, that's probably, like, one of the most quoted lines in this movie, that, like, if people see them on the streets and stuff like that, people always sing that part. It's a classic for a reason. I love how Reese is just kind of like, she's chill and, like, smiling. See, here's the difference between me and Sydney, because whether me, like, I love Dre more than just a friend, or, but he's still my best friend. And bitch, you cheating on him, I would have thrown hands for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It wouldn't have been.
She was way too nice about it.
I think she was more embarrassed than anything about the situation. Like, she wasn't doing anything reactionary of, like, the situation beyond, like, Dre's behavior.
Yeah. It's no bueno. And I think one of the biggest mistakes that they made was going back to Sydney's instead of, like, maybe a bar and just chilling out a little bit. Yeah. Because they knocked the boots.
They did. And it was good.
And it was short. We learned it went by pretty quickly. And I love how they have that conversation just so openly about everything. But I think Sydney is conflicted, and Dre is just kind of confused as to what Sydney wants, because I think obviously he's wanted this.
Mm-hmm.
And but she does have a point, like, you literally just, you didn't even get divorced yet. You just found out your wife was cheating on you. Like, what the hell? Like, you know?
This night, you had not even had processing time. Like,
and on my part, I have a fiance. Like, I'm like working through planning this damn wedding. So they part ways, and Sydney has a lot to think about. And in this in-between time, Dre wants to know if Sydney has actually seen the review, because he is going to the radio station. He is trying to get Cab his, you know, song played or whatever, because they've been working on stuff in the studio. And that's where he kind of has to reach out to Sydney and say, like, hey, you know, I just need to know, like, what's going on with this review or whatever. Yeah. Or I don't know if he reaches, I don't think he reaches out to her, actually. When he goes to the radio station, he submits the tape and he really pushes for it to get heard. And I think somehow it then gets to Double XL. And so Sydney is mad because she thinks that he did it on purpose. But he's like, why would I do that? I wanted to see if it would naturally get to you, because I could have just given it to you. Like, and so she's saying it's a conflict of interest because she's invested, which I agree. Like, she should not, she should stay out of it just in case it gets back to her. Mm-hmm. Like, so she gives it to someone else on the team that he doesn't think is going to vibe with it. So he's a little upset and he's like, I need you to like step in. She's like, she can't. So they have an argument about that, but we know it's, again, it's the hip hop, but they're really fighting about their relationship.
Yeah.
And I think after the review comes, when the review is done, she does bring it to him in his hotel. And she's just like, I think this is when he puts it on all on the table for her, like that he is like still in love, like he's in love with her, like he wants to be with her. And she still gets scared and leaves.
And then he goes to meet Reese.
Right. Because Reese wants to give it one more chance. She just feels like maybe she won't feel right unless she knows that she gave it her all, because they are married.
Yeah.
And she knows she's in the wrong, but they have like an amicable thing. And I think it's amicable because he was never in love with her. He loved her. He loved what she stood for, what she meant for his status, but he was never in love with her.
Yeah.
And now that he's admitted it to Sydney, and there's like no turning back, he's not going to be with her. And at this point, is this where she breaks, Sydney brings up with Kelby? I think she.
Yeah. She goes to talk to Kelby, and Kelby kind of calls her out, and he says, I love you, but not the way you love him. And so then Sydney apologizes and gives the ring back because she recognizes, like, he's right. Like, I have been in love with Dre this entire time. I've just been trying to fight it.
Yeah. I mean, if she didn't fight it, we wouldn't have a movie. But it is what it is.
So she goes to try and find Dre.
Yeah.
And she sees him and Reese walking out of the restaurant. And, they're friendly, like he's kissing her on the cheek and giving her a hug goodbye, and Sydney misinterprets that as they got back together rather than kind of like a goodbye thing. So she kind of just walks away. She doesn't try to engage with Dre at this point. And then the next sequence is she's finished her book. She has an interview at the radio station discussing her book. And her book is called A Love Letter to Hip Hop, but like everyone knows, like in her inner circle, everyone knows like hip hop is just a facade, and it's actually the love letter to Dre.
Right. And at this point, Dre is in the cab with Cav, and they hear his song played, and they're super excited, but like, they know that Sydney's at the radio station, and it hits Dre like that when he's listening to her interview, and he's like, shit, she talking about me.
Mm-hmm.
And so Cav's like, yo, let's go get your girl. So they head to the radio station, And when they get there, you see Dre grab a piece of paper and you're not really quite sure why. But then as he runs to the booth outside the glass, he puts up a piece of paper. And earlier there's like another line where he says, like, I don't want, you know, I was always the kind of guy like who wouldn't do all these roses things. I would just be like, check the box of you do you like me? Do you want to go out with me? Check yes, yeah. Check no kind of thing. So he literally does that like old school elementary school style for Sydney because it is really cute. I also want to mention the fact that in this scene, Dre is wearing a white sweater. And if you look at it, it is the same sweater that Billy Crystal wears, the infamous sweater you see.
Oh, in that's interesting.
How Harry met Sally. So I thought that was a really cool homage to that movie. And obviously Sydney loves the gesture and they make out and they're in love. They're together. That's her lobster.
It is. And he tells her, you're my heir, which is so lovely and poetic. And then Chris, what is his name?
Kev?
Kev's standing there and he's kind of like, at the New Year's party, he gets on this tangent about like champagne flutes with Francine and like it's just meandering and kind of odd. And so at the end, he continues his diatribe on why they're called champagne flutes and how they were invented and stuff. And Francine is a no-nonsense sharpshooter. And she's just like, Kev, you want to go out with me? And he's like, oh, yeah.
yeah that could work, that could work, like give me a break, my dude. Just finally everybody's in love now, everyone's got a partner, so yes. It all works out.
And that is Brown Sugar.
Yeah, I love this movie. So a few more fun facts. Mary J. Blige actually inspired the film's screenwriter Michael Elliott because he heard her 7 Days on the radio in 1998. Before he was on the verge of giving up on his filmmaking dreams, he wrote a lyric from the song Down on a Napkin, and it says, now what are we going to do? That lingering question became the end of the first act of Elliot's new script, arriving after a kiss between two longtime friends. So I thought that was great. I didn't know that. And so much so that the original title of the movie was called 7 Days, and he was able to sell the script to 20th Century Fox for $250,000. And it was also almost called I Used to Love Her, which is a reference to, I believe Common has a song, I Used to Love Her, but they opted for more subtle Brown Sugar.
So Rick was a young director coming off of his first hit film, 1999's The Wood. So the studios sought after him because of his fresh voice and humor for the romantic comedy.
Let's see what else. He wanted to bring out the romanticism of a musical genre that was becoming increasingly associated with violence and excess in its mainstream commercial form, which I thought was good. That, you know, this movie does put like a sweetness that you don't always see, I think, in mainstream about hip hop, but there's a lot of it incorporated in hip hop. It just is not as commercialized, which kind of sucks. So I love that he was able to incorporate that in this movie.
I don't even want to say his name. Kanye West, featuring a soulful sample of Norman Connor's Invitation and Bay rapping smoothly from his perspective of his character. Bay contributed to the entire soundtrack in the role of producer and artist.
And the film soundtrack wasn't just curated. It was produced by Dre. Tay Diggs, who plays Dre, actually has musical talent. He co-produced 2 tracks on the album and co-wrote the song Hip Hop, which I never knew that. I used to listen to the soundtrack to this, so I now want to go back and listen again. Oh, and I love this fact because you know how we have rom-com jobs? Like, you are either a journalist at a newspaper or a magazine editor. So Sydney Shaw was one of the first Black girl editors, magazine editors we saw in a film.
name is also alliterative, like Andy Anderson's name, also working for a magazine.
And the restaurant that Dre catches Reese and her date in is the same restaurant that is featured in The Best Man. And, oh, speaking of NBA, Magic Johnson contributed to this movie being made when Elliot wrote the screenplay in a month, and it dropped. He ended up dropping it off at Magic Johnson Entertainment, a company run by Magic Johnson, who at the time had a deal with 20th Century Fox, so it just worked out. I think there was just like such a thirst once they started to see these movies do well, like all the studios wanted a piece of it. And so just worked out this way. But if you agree with Jackie that this is more of a melodrama or dramedy, or do you think this is a rom-com, hit us up at No More Late Fees on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, or YouTube, and Threads, and let us know your opinions. And if you had any opinions about this movie or things that you thought we missed or you loved, let us know. And if you don't want to do it on social media,
hit us up on our quick drop, 909-601-6653. Twat us at the Twitters, hem us at the Threads, and you can be featured on a future episode.
All right. Present day ratings, Jackie.
So I am not saying anything about, like, cinematically, it was very well made. The story was fine. Acting, great. Casting, superb. For me, personally, in my life, this was too dramatic for me. I needed more levity, like I was talking about at the beginning. So it's going to be a 2-day for me.
A 2-day.
Yeah, it was too dramatic. Sorry. I can see how all other people really love this movie and appreciate it. Just for me, I need more antics.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's a would buy for me. I do love this movie. I think after rewatching it, I definitely see it from a different viewpoint than when I was younger, having more experience in relationships, being able to say like, yeah, I'm dirty for this one. But I don't feel that Dre is as shitty as I thought of Omar Epps' character in Love and Basketball, like after years later seeing it. So I can sleep happy with that one.
And as always, be kind and rewind.